Hey, it's Wolf. What will be the key for the Arizona Cardinals to pull off an upset over the Dallas Cowboys? How about them Cowboys now? We get going at 10 a.m. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports.
Yeah, I think a big part of it was his confidence. I think you could feel that in the way he was playing the game and the way he was making decisions and the way he was taking ownership in and out of the huddle on the sideline with the guys. So I was really encouraged by that and certainly expect it to continue.
Drew Petzing, offensive coordinator of the Cardinals, speaking with the media yesterday, talking about his quarterback, Joshua Dobbs, who the numbers didn't look that much different for Dobbs. In fact, his completion percentage was almost identical as what it was against the Giants in week one against Washington. The yardage was there. Yards per attempt was up, 3 yards per attempt. It wasn't as dink and dunky as it was in week one.
They took shots.
But I think Drew Petzing, too, talked about the biggest difference with Joshua Dobbs, and that was confidence. He promised a jump. I think the offense did make, it wasn't, it wasn't a 53-inch vertical jump, but it was a pretty good jump in week two against against the Giants.
I think it was a market jump. I think that had the Cardinals won that game, Josh Dobbs would be all we were talking about. If that second half looked like the first half, I think we would be talking about, is Josh Dobbs our future?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what we would be talking about this week, because I think he was that good in the first half.
If that second half was like the first half, there I would have put a poll on Monday that said, Kyler Murray, Josh Dobbs, or Caleb Williams. Like, who would you want to have?
Well, and let's forget, it's not only that the offense just looked seamless, it moved the ball just bang, 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 bang. The Giants just won the toss, decided to kick off, and the Cardinals posted a very nice opening drive. And then they scored, and then they scored again, and then Josh Dobbs truck Xavier McKinney on his way to the end zone, and people went nuts. And then he scored a second touchdown by giving his body up at the goal line. People went nuts, and it was like, wow, look at this coming out party. And then the collapse happened, and then that storyline just kind of shriveled.
The other thing that has shriveled for the Cardinals, and this has been constant through both weeks, is fourth quarter production, where there wasn't a big need to put up massive numbers in either of the fourth quarters to win those games. Mm-hmm. The turnovers were big in the Washington game, but the Cardinals have done nothing in the fourth quarter offensively. In fact, I looked it up. They're second to last in the NFL in fourth quarter passing.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Dobbs is 9 of 16 for 46 yards in the fourth quarters. That's a 61.5 rating. Only Geno Smith of the Seahawks has less fourth quarter passing production, and it's only 2 yards less. And they're 28th in the league in fourth quarter rushing, too.
I think we were talking about two obviously dramatically different circumstances between week one and week two, if you ask me. I mean, everything about those two games were just mutually exclusive.
Yes.
But the stats say what they say. And it's a team that did not execute in the fourth quarter. I think in this past Sunday's game, the way they didn't execute in the fourth quarter was even more egregious than the not producing against the Commanders in week one. You're on the road in week one, and you're facing a defense that's really good, even without Chase Young. That's really good. Mm-hmm. Montez Sweat was spectacular in that game. So I think on Sunday it was the idea that this offense had its way in the first half. You go back, just even the pass attempts that they tried in the fourth quarter, they got very, very, very conservative.
They
really did not want to make a mistake, and it backfired badly.
Here was Drew Petzing yesterday on the fourth quarter offensive struggles through 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think, and I know JG hit on it, I think it comes down to execution, and it certainly comes down to play calling. You know, I got to get those guys in position to make plays at the end of the game. We need to lock in and feel confident that we can execute in critical situations. I certainly have that confidence in the players. I want them to have it in themselves. But that's something certainly we're going to take a look at, because it got us here the first 2 weeks of the season.
And another common thread between them, even though one game was on the road, one game was at home, when the game got tight late, the Cardinals were dealing with pretty intense crowd noise. Drew Petzing was asked, hey, did it surprise you how much noise the Giants fans made at that point in the game?
No, I think the biggest thing in that situation is when we're communicating in the line of scrimmage, we all got to make sure that we remember the snap count and that we're locked in on what we're trying to accomplish. I think there was a little bit of lack of focus more than anything. I think our fans did a great job all game, so was really encouraged by that, and we just got to lock in those key moments.
Defensive coordinator Nick Rawlis talked about the home atmosphere, experiencing that for the first time.
Obviously, you love when the crowd is bumping on defense. I've also been up in the box for most of my career where you do start to feel that. But like once the drive is going and once the game is going, you know, as a play caller, you don't necessarily notice a lot of that. Off of a stoppage, stuff like that, you can definitely start to feel that loud noise. But yeah, anytime you're playing defense and the crowd is into it, that's a good thing.
And this will remain a storyline until it's not a storyline anymore.
Yeah.
About the Cardinals actually rewarding their home fans with a win. 1-14 in their last 15 home games. That's historically bad.
Yes, and it's really bad now because I think last year, as you watched the football team, you kind of saw the dysfunction. You kind of saw the borderline incompetence at the top. We saw all that, and I think we all realized there isn't any reason to believe in where this is going. This direction is bad. This foundation is bad. I think we all felt that, and we talked about it in real time. But now you've got a new regime that's trying to build something and is producing good results. Now they're having to deal with this. It's sort of like Kenny Dillingham having to deal with Herm Edwards' crime. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing. They're inheriting a problem they do not deserve and did not cause.
It's a good way to put it. But for those that were around, the ones that are dealing with it, they're the ones that are frustrated by it.
Listen, it's just sad to hear Josh Dobbs, who is very, you ever hear this guy? He's almost like a rocket scientist. Jarrett, you should sing about that.
What a dork. Smart guy.
Right. But when he talks about how, you know, noise is an issue in the NFL and you're like, he's talking about home games. It can be so demoralizing. I can only imagine what it's like for the players who had not experienced that. You know what I mean? Like, what is going on here?
Well, I mean, if Sunday goes the way most are expecting it to go in terms of attendance and in terms of on-field result, I'm very curious because we could say largely the Giants fan influence has been diminished, downplayed by the Cardinals side.
Mm-hmm.
If this goes badly, I wonder how the tune will change.
You've been saying it for a week and a half. This coming weekend might go down as the all-time worst in our history
football.
As a football market.
Yeah, if you consider
NFL
the Sun
market,
Devils and the Cardinals.
When you consider what these games might look and feel like. So, that's the challenge to the Sun Devils and the Cardinals. Don't suck too much.
I mean, is it too late to reroute the teams? Can USC play the Cowboys?
Oh, there you go.
That's a great idea.
Cardinals, Sun Devils?
Yeah, right.
I'd sign up
Give
for
the
that.
Cowboys a little, like, sneak peek at Caleb Williams. Yeah.
You can text your thoughts to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. Coming up next, we'll stay in the NFL. Some stories around the league, including one quarterback maybe getting undue criticism for his routine. We'll get into that and more next. It's Pickley and Marotta Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Pickley and Marotta. Hash marks.
Don Watson, he's over on the sideline. That's a member of his performance team that's sitting next to him. He's doing some visualization, maybe a little meditation, but definitely was going through the visualization part of it, and we'll see whether or not that pays dividends for him on this drive now.
That was Troy Aikman Monday night on ESPN. Late in the ball game, with the Browns down after the defensive touchdown that gave the Steelers the lead, they showed pregame footage of Deshaun Watson sitting on the bench, you know, in a less hectic moment, obviously, with his eyes closed, with as you heard Aikman say, a member of his performance team with him. And Troy Aikman kind of giggling there at the end of that cut has certainly garnered some reaction.
Oh, no doubt about it. He came off as very, very old school and dismissive. And I'm going to make this personal. My daughter once told me that, Dad, the biggest difference between my generation and yours is that your generation laughs at the idea of mental health, scoffs at it, whereas my generation is very much in tune with it as a thing. And I think she's right about that. Who's ever right on the issue, I think she's right about that observation, because I knew I grew up in a very linear world where, okay, either your brain was good or it wasn't. right?
True.
You didn't question things. You just accepted what you were told, and you just dealt with certain things, and you didn't question things, and you didn't question how you felt.
And if something was wrong, you could see it out.
Yeah,
it was
right.
obvious to
yes,
you.
Right, exactly.
And
exactly.
if you had a mental problem, you were weak.
Weak, that's it. There's a stigma to it. There was a certain stigma to it. And that's exactly what was coming out of Troy Aikman last night. He might not have meant it that way, but that's the way it sounded, because Deshaun Watson was visualizing it. His eyes closed, he might have been meditating. These are things that a young generation deploys and uses very successfully.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but to further your point, we're, you know, roughly in the same age group. You ask 100 guys in our age group, hey, what do you think about going to therapy?
Oh, yeah.
See what kind of reaction you would
get. Yeah. Oh, not me. I don't know.
There's men in our demographic right. that would rather die than talk to a therapist.
It's the way we were raised.
Yes.
Don't blame us.
But I also think there's
another. Don't blame us for our low bandwidth. It's the way we were raised. We blame our abusive parents who didn't care about us.
No.
So okay now let's back this up a minute now. So this happened, but it also could be just the general kind of contempt for Deshaun Watson, because there's a lot of people now who are saying, "Oh, the dude, he can't play anymore." And granted, he's not been the way he was in Houston, but I thought he showed flashes in that game against the Steelers of the kind of threat he has been in his NFL career. And let's just take last year off the table. Because he was, you know, didn't come back till late in the season, and he'd been away a long time. Okay, let's just deal with that for a minute.
At the risk of sounding like a hater, though, just based on what you just said, can you take last year off the table when you're talking about the enormity of that contract?
I guess you're right. I guess that's not appropriate.
And here's the other thing: just the general image and opinion of many. Forget his play on the field. The general image of Deshaun Watson causes many people to want to criticize him and make fun of everything he does anyway.
Yes, yeah. There's that. Yeah. And I want to add another aspect to, and I might be reading into this, but, you know, Troy Aikman, he did sound old school there.
Yeah, he did.
But also just the idea of, you consider when Troy Aikman played quarterback in the NFL, came out of college in the mid to late 80s and then played through the mid 90s. This idea of quarterbacks having quote unquote performance teams, I mean, that's hard to swallow for a lot of the quote unquote old school quarterbacks.
And listen, you guys, I can't get anything by you guys. You guys are right on it this morning. That's because that's the third element of this.
Yes.
There was apparently a performance coach of his, not the team's, his, who was in his ear conducting this exercise with him.
Mm-hmm.
And to Troy Aikman, that's like, go be with your teammates. Go lead your teammates. Go be part of them. Don't be a team of one.
And to Troy Aikman, he probably walks away from it and might not respond to the criticism he's getting for it. But he can say, hey, how'd those visualizations work out for you late on that drive, Deshaun?
Jeez.
Not too good.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's right. But
there's also look, whatever happened off the field with him, we can agree at a baseline that he's kind of creepy, right?
Right.
I mean, at the baseline, right?
That Deshaun Watson is kind of creepy.
I'm being facetious here,
okay?
Right. And so I think, but I also think the way that he has handled this has been really bad. He has just continuously blamed the media for this.
Yeah,
for his situation, there's not been a scintilla of any kind of remorse anything.
Good word,
scintilla.
Yeah. Look, Deshaun Watson.
He does NCAA tournament games on CBS. Fran Scintilla.
I thought it was one of them hairy weasel type creatures. Scintilla.
I thought it was that thing that you wrap around your burrito.
Yeah, that's right. There's that. So yeah, I don't know. Deshaun Watson is one of those guys that you take a look at lists now of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. He's nowhere near. He's not on that list anymore, and he won't be.
No, and now Cleveland is in a situation where by taking that chance, giving Deshaun Watson that lifeline to play quarterback, and then backing it up with this contract that still has feathers ruffled around the NFL because of the size of it and the 100% guarantee, there's plenty of people that are rooting for Deshaun Watson to fail. But the experiment might have paid off. If he can improve his play when you have a Nick Chubb on your offense, that might be the makings of a good team. Now you take Nick Chubb off of it, and it's the Deshaun Watson show offensively. And it hasn't been a very compelling show to watch.
No, he was up against a good defense and a really good pass rush. And again, I thought Deshaun Watson had some moments where he showed that combination of poise and arm strength that made him such a, and athleticism. He's never really been a dual threat guy, but he's been very athletic and he's always been very brave and he's always stood very tall in the pocket and when he's slinging, he can be very effective. Yeah, I agree. He hasn't been that guy. Maybe it's because I was proud of myself for picking the Browns as a sleeper team going into the year because it looked like they might be until Nick Chubb went down.
And also, before all this, the legal stuff happened with him, so years ago now, you were a huge supporter from the moment he came out of college. You said his team should have drafted him sooner. He had such success at Clemson. Why were they overlooking him? Mm-hmm. Then the whole, should they trade Kyler Murray for Deshaun Watson?
I was an advocate of that as well. I was a strong advocate of that.
So
I've always been a fan. You're right. So I've always been a fan of his game. So, yeah, I probably am being maybe a little more tolerant than
and also,
I should be.
This season, as we've pointed out many times, it's only two games. So who knows? Maybe he'll, as having a full offseason, maybe he'll get better as the season goes on.
The two games, I mean, you look at the numbers, 55% completions. His last year in Houston, he was at 70%. And I hate completion percentage as a stat. But when it's that low, you have to consider it.
Yeah, Jared's right. It just seems like it's already too loud around the NFL. I mean, the amount of fan fights, a guy died at the Patriots-Bills game, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
You're 2 weeks into the season. What are you so angry about?
How much time do we got here?
We mentioned therapy at the top of this segment.
Here we go. Right? That's right.
Therapy
full
comes
circle,
in
baby.
Many
right.
forms,
yes.
Sarah.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Like screaming into a pillow?
Yeah.
Yeah, but through two games, Deshaun Watson, 38 of 69, 389 yards, two touchdowns, two picks, and again, 55.1% completions. For a 1-1 team, a quarterback rating of 69.1. They're paying $250 million for Josh Dobbs' numbers through 2 weeks. That's why people overreact.
Yeah, okay. That's fair.
Yeah.
Can't argue with that.
Because he's paid as the cream of the crop quarterback in the NFL.
Yeah, can't argue with that.
I'm wondering, too, now with Chubb gone, how desperate Cleveland gets. Do they really roll the dice and try to trade for Jonathan Taylor? Chubb might not ever play again.
No, apparently they're signing Kareem Hunt. According to Mary
Jo. Kareem Hunt was going
to just recently today, she said they're close to signing him.
Wow. Bringing
Mary
him
Kay.
Back.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, they already got Deshaun Watson to groom his kids.
If you're going to absolutely, I mean.
Lean in, baby. Lean
I guess it doesn't really matter at this point, right? Like, we might as well go all in and.
Yeah, trade for Tyreek Hill.
Well, I think the Browns think they have a good team, because they do.
Yeah.
I don't know if they do.
I think they do.
Join Burns and Gambo this Friday at Sanderson Ford. They'll be giving you your last chance to win a road trip to see the Cardinals in San Francisco. Be among the first 50 fans to arrive. You'll receive an exclusive limited edition State 48 Dawn of a New Era t-shirt. You want more information, you can find it on the contest page at arizonasports.com. Coming up next, Sarah takes us through the big stories of the day in the rebound?
For rebounding?
I'm sorry about that. Get oot of the reboot. That's coming up next here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader. Bickley and Murata Mornings. Rush Hour Reboot. Rush Hour Reboot. Getting you up to speed on everything happening in sports this morning. Brought to you by Brooklyn Betting. Arizona built for America's dreams.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Wednesday here in the Valley. I really had to think about that for a second. This is the Rush Hour Reboot on Bickley and Murata Mornings. We take you through everything you need to know in Valley sports and beyond. Let's do that now. I'm Sarah Cazell with Dan Bickley.
Hello.
Vince Murata. Oh, yes.
Wow.
The Monday night theme?
Yeah. We get to hear the full 1 minute and 40 second version of it.
Did it make the goosebumps appear on your arms or no?
That's just a great song. And they did a very good version of
it. It's a
that
good
song.
Part of a... Of a do you think
an
that's
okay
a great song?
It's
a great,
it's absolutely. Okay.
I think okay. It is a great song.
It builds to that moment.
I'm with Jared on that. That's one of those songs that has a great ending.
It builds to that drums Crescent. Thing,
yeah.
But it's
right.
really slow. Like
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's Jarrett Carlin, by the way. Don't be weird, Vince.
Don't be weird, Vince.
There's one thing Jarrett knows, it's music.
Oh, he's breathing that repeatedly.
Indeed. All right, let's...
Jarrett might be in his creative prime. He might be like Led Zeppelin by their second album, you know? Rolling Stones by Exile on Main Street. I think you might be right getting into your prime because the last few Jarrett song parodies have been...
I think I'm entering the Starship, We Built This City on Rock and Roll era, though.
Yeah, okay.
Don't praise me until you hear week three.
Yeah, well,
good
I
call.
I was also kind of being facetious there, too.
All right, let's get into this with the Arizona Diamondbacks. They have won four in a row now with the end of the regular season fast approaching. They've got 10 games left before the postseason hits. Last night, they took out the Giants 8-4 at Chase Field. It was rocking with the roof open on a Tuesday night. Let's start with the second inning, which yielded four runs for the D-backs. First, Corbin Carroll hit a two-out double to score Gabby Moreno and Geraldo Perdomo.
Ground ball fair, left field side. Two runs are going to score. In is Moreno, in is Perdomo, and into second base with a two-run double is Corbin Carroll and a 3-2 Diamondback lead.
Yes, he mentions Corbin Carroll. He was on second after that double, and Ketel Marte was on first after he got walked. They pulled off a double steal that fully threw the Giants off kilter.
Here's the pitch where the runner's going. Bailey down to third, and Carroll gets in safely as the ball gets away. And now Carroll's coming to the plate, and he's safe. The ball gets away. Here comes Marte. Throw to the plate. He's safe. Oh, what exciting baseball by the Diamondbacks.
Hey!
Hey!
Obviously, we were going to have that queued up. So Corbin Carroll and Ketel Marte both score there to put the D-backs up 5-2 at the end of the second. What was your guys' reaction when you watched that in real time?
It was everything that makes this team compelling. It's everything that makes them dangerous. It was a risky attempt. It put the onus on the Giants.
Yeah.
And then I think Corbin Carroll, talk about forcing the issue. He should have been thrown out on that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he got a late start off it, and he just kind of said, screw it, I'm going.
Yeah.
I'm fast. I can do this.
We'll make them deal with it, right?
I like the calculation of it, though, and it's hard to gauge, you know, how much thinking went in because it's such a bang-bang play, but I think the Diamondbacks went into this series against the Giants with the idea of challenging the Giants defensively because
yeah.
they do make a ton of errors.
Oh.
There's been times this year where they're trying to take an extra base, running against guys that have absolute howitzers for throwing arms,
yeah.
and you're like, where's the calculation
yeah.
there? So I think, it, you know, that I love that. Put the pressure on yeah. the opponent.
And nothing can make an opponent doubt themselves more than what Steve Bertheum and others call a snowball fight. You create a play where they
yep.
start throwing the ball all over the yard. They
yes.
know how idiotic they look
yep.
and amateurish they look. It's hard for teams to recover from that stuff.
That's
yeah.
going to end up on not top 10 or
oh,
something like
yeah.
that.
Yes,
yeah.
for
yeah,
sure. So that play was the game, in my opinion.
Yeah. All right, let's look at the other side. Zach Gallen, he gave up all four of the Giants' runs, two in the first and then two in the fifth. Six hits, three walks, six strikeouts. Zach Gallen, what is your deal right now?
I'm not really executing, really. I think it's plain and simple, really. I think anybody could kind of see that. You don't need me to tell you that.
Torrey said that he thinks one of your three pitches isn't necessarily at its best. Is that the curveball that he's thinking about? If you feel the same way.
I mean, I just think that I haven't really been executing. I think this is what it comes down to. Is what it is. Just have to do a better job.
He has to do a better job. Okay.
It is what it is.
Yes. Four earned runs, like I said. His previous start gave up six earned runs, two starts before that, five. The start before that, six. If the D-backs do make the postseason, which today Fangraphs says they have a 65.7% chance.
Good number.
It is. Are you fully confident in Zach Gallen to rise to the occasion?
Yes.
Listen. I don't know. His home road splits are pretty bad to begin with. So chances are they're going to be playing a road series. I don't know. To be quite honest with you, Sarah, I think he might be gassed a little bit.
I mean, there is that to consider. If they do make it and they're playing on the road in a best of three, you know what the pressure feels like your first time in the postseason. But I think a lot of people are really poring over Zach Gallen performances with the hope that he's still going to win the Cy Young. That's gone.
Yeah,
he's not going to. It's going to be Steele or it's going to be Snell. Zach Gallen's job right now is to be better than the guy that he's facing, and he was last night. Yeah. I mean, that's what they need to worry about. Now, if it comes down to a high-pressure situation, the Diamondbacks, I don't even know how much high pressure they'll be under in the postseason should they make it. They're not expected to be there. None of these teams that are competing are expected to do anything, so they're kind of playing with house money.
Just go have fun.
Yeah.
Let it all hang out. They have one more game against the Giants today, starting at 12:40. You can hear it on ESPN 620 and the Arizona Sports app. We also are going to be joined by ESPN's Jeff Passan this morning at 8:30. You do not want to miss that. He is always a very fun guest. Let's get to college football with a very injured ASU team getting ready to play number five USC.
How injured are they?
Bad.
It's got so bad I pulled my hamstring watching them on Saturday. Hey.
So Drew Pine was getting the first team snaps yesterday in practice. We saw tweets trickling out from ASU's practice. And we also saw that Kenny Dillingham took over play calling duties in place of his OC, Bo Baldwin. Now, before the practice yesterday, we had Chris Cartman of Sun Devil Source on Bickley Imarata Mornings. He said that right now the best thing ASU football could do is no longer have Ray Anderson, the athletic director, at the helm.
There's a lot of boosters out there who are hesitant to put money to support ASU athletics right now. I've talked to several of them who have been prominent donors over the years. And with Anderson having another 2+ years, almost 2.5 years on his contract, if he remains through that duration, it makes it hard for, in the NIL era, for the enough money to be piped in to really overcome a lot of the challenges that you have at ASU, especially when you're going to be going to the Big 12.
We've had multiple moments over the last really 2 or 3 years where we've said, oh, there's no way Ray Anderson survives this. And yet he has. So at this point, what do you guys think would need to happen for his job truly to be on the line? How bad does it have to get?
Yeah, I think we're already there. I think it's really just a matter of when they decide to do this. Because I do what Chris has said, I have told you, I've heard the same thing from my smaller sampling size of boosters I talk to, that they have said no more. We're not giving another dime as long as that guy is there. And that's an issue. Yeah. That is an issue.
In every walk of life, in every walk of a corner of business, money talks.
But the thing is if he resigns now, is he taking the easy way out? Does that mean that Kenny Dillingham now has to wear all of these awful losses that await this football team this season?
And there's two different levels of this, too. The Ray Anderson situation is big picture future questions.
Yeah.
The current right now is just messy.
Yeah, I don't think there's any coming back from this for Ray Anderson, personally.
I don't think so either.
That was a great conversation with Chris Cartman. By the way, if you want to hear the full thing, it's on our website, arizonasports.com.
Thank you, Sarah. Reboot every morning at 7:30, where she takes us through the big stories of the day. The big story, baseball-wise, the Arizona Diamondbacks rolling along, fourth straight win, getting closer to that wild card spot. We'll get into it next. Bickley and Murata Mornings here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Everybody, it's Dave Burns here. Not exactly the best from Zach Gallen, but good enough for the Diamondbacks to win the opener against the Giants. So can Merrill Kelly bring it home today? We're updating the playoff race on the Burns and Gambo Show, starting at straight up 2 o'clock.
Solid team effort today. You know, there were so many things, so many good things that happened during the day, during the game. And, you know, you can't just target one thing. You know, the base running was aggressive. The situational hitting was timely. We were building the inning offensively. We were patient. You know, Cobb's We know he's been throwing every seventh or eighth day, but he's been throwing the ball very well. You know, I thought we got had a good game plan against him. We fell behind 2-0 in the first inning. I don't think the team was fazed by that. We chipped away with one in the bottom of the inning, and then I thought we made a ton of statements in the four-run second with just good hitting, timely and aggressive base running. And to me, that was a big difference in the game.
Torey Lovello, manager of the Diamondbacks, on the solid team effort, as you called it last night. 8-4 win over the San Francisco Giants in the opener. Two-game series, last game today for the Diamondbacks against a National League West opponent. The Giants have a much different schedule the rest of the way. They're finishing with division opponents their last 16 games of the year. I don't know what to make of that. Obviously, the travel is a little bit wonky for the D-backs, having to go to New York and Chicago to play American League teams this late is weird.
It's a very strange way to end the season.
It is.
You're literally going to unplug from this gigantic game today and roll through some cities you don't normally play, some stadiums you don't normally play in, and then you're coming home to face an extremely powerful team that may or may not be engaged this weekend, depending on where they stand in the playoff standing. So it's a really bizarre, it scares me, to be quite honest with you. It really does. I like what I see from this baseball team when they're going up against these big teams and big tasks, if you will, going into Wrigley for a weekend, coming back to play the Cubs when the Cubs have all the revenge and all the motive on their side. And now the first night against the Giants, the way you took it to them, having to roll into to Yankee Stadium, having to roll into the south side of Chicago, I don't know, man. It feels very dangerous to me.
Yeah, nine straight games to end the season against American League teams, of which is a playoff team in Houston.
This baseball team, man, at one point in time of the season, when they were 16 games over 500, their odds of making the playoffs, I think they crested at around 78%. When they lost 25 of 32 games in the span of 42 days, they went down to about 20%. Now they're back to what, would you say, Sarah?
65, was it?
65.7. Yeah.
What a roller coaster. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, mercy. And then, but to watch Torey Lovello last night in the dugout, he looked very satisfied because everything he asked his team to do, they delivered. And it occurred to me watching last night's game, you know, you watch Aaron Judge impact a baseball game, you know that what that looks like. Shohei, you know what that looks like. Ronald Acuna Jr., you know what that looks like. I think we all saw what Corbin Carroll and how he disrupts a baseball game, what that looks like last night. Those first two hits were so important for the flow and the momentum of that game, and to exercise exactly what the manager wanted that team to do.
Mm-hmm.
To put all the pressure on them, make them react fast, make them think, jar them out of their comfort zone, give them something they haven't seen, and if you get thrown out in the base paths, I got your back. We'll deal with it.
Yeah. And look, we talked about it briefly early this morning in D-backs Daily, but and maybe people don't want to talk about it because they view it as a jinx. The bullpen has been tremendous in about the last 3 weeks for the Diamondbacks, which is a night and day difference from where they were for most of the season. In fact, that was the Achilles heel for this team for a good portion of the season. One of the Achilles heels. Zach Gallen at 5 innings wasn't his most effective. Did get the win number 16, but he tipped his cap to the bullpen and what they are doing.
Bullpen's been great, really. They've stepped up in a huge way. You know, it's a volatile position down there, you know, because when things are going well, you know, they kind of have a tendency to get glossed over. But when things aren't going well, I feel for those guys, and they've definitely stepped up in a big way, really. They kind of kept us in some games, you know, did their job of slamming the door, you know, especially tonight having to get 4 innings. So, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, you see it when you go down the stretch and teams that are successful in the playoffs and get into the playoffs, the bullpen is usually one of the things that, you know, really carries them through.
And this came up in the reboot briefly too, Beck, about, you know, this group of teams that the Diamondbacks are in right now with the Cubs, Reds, Marlins, trying to get one of these wild card spots. We had Carl Ravitch on last Friday, and I asked him the question, look, this is exciting. We know Major League Baseball loves this, to have this many teams still involved with 10 games or so to go.
Mm-hmm.
But can any of these teams, you know, really claim, hey, we deserve it because of the season we had? And he had some thoughts on that. Tim Kirkjian, his cohort at ESPN, kind of echoed a similar sentiment.
I'm not sold on any of those teams doing any. I'm not. I'm just not sold on them doing severe damage in the playoffs, because let's say the Diamondbacks, you know, they're young, hungry, athletic, really fun to watch, Corbin Carroll and the rest. But after Merrill Kelly and Zach Gallen, I'm just not sure their pitching is going to be strong enough out of the rotation. Same with the Reds. I just don't think the Marlins are going to score enough runs to make a big difference here. It's a tricky group. I mean, there's a reason why they're all fighting for the second playoff spot. It's because they've all been, you know, a little bit above 500, a little better than that all season. I just think when you look at damage in the postseason, that means you got to beat the Braves or you got to beat the Dodgers. And I just don't think there are many teams that are capable of doing.
Look, I don't think he's often saying that, but if you're among the flawed, be the best of the flawed. For the Diamondbacks, this is an ascension. 2 years ago, they lost, 110 games? 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
To be in this situation with 10 games left this year is part of the ascension. Announcing your arrival as a postseason team, regardless of what happens against whom, is part of the ascension.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, you're playing with house money. You're going up against maybe the Phillies, who are the one wild card team, I think, that might be able to put a scare into the Dodgers or Braves.
I agree with that.
I don't think the Diamondbacks are there yet. I don't think the Cubs or the Reds are there, but join the party.
Oh, it would be such a proverbial feather in their cap to make the playoffs this year, especially with the adversity, the pockets of adversity this year. Yeah, that in itself would be its own reward. I really do. And the fact that they're cresting at the right time, whether it's coincidence or not, and we talk about this in baseball all the time, nobody knows why baseball hitters go through periods when the baseball looks like a frisbee, and then there are times when it looks like a beach ball.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's no real knowing. What, are you struggling with that analogy, Jarrett?
I thought you were going to say like a golf ball and
a
frisbee.
Like a BB. Okay, how about that? Like a
you ever
BB.
Tried to hit a frisbee with a baseball bat? I don't think that would be very easy.
It'd be hard,
yeah,
too.
It'd be very hard. Yeah, it would be very, very difficult. So,
unless it's
so,
this way.
You don't know why the Diamondbacks are doing what they're doing right now, but it looks like they're clutch.
Yeah.
Right?
Looks like it.
It looks like it, and you can build on that. And if you can accelerate through this to the finish line and leave all these other nags in your dust, babe. Do you see that horse race thing? Yeah, I think it would look good on this baseball team.
Are you betting on the bobtail nag bet?
No.
And this game is enormous, too, because, you know, as quickly as you can eliminate one of the teams from the cluster, you got to do so. The Giants are hanging on by their fingernails right now. Don't give them any hope going into the last 10 games of the season. That game gets underway today, 12:40 at Chase, 12 o'clock, high noon pregame on ESPN 620 and the Arizona Sports app. Coming up next, the second half of the show kicks off in grand fashion. The Bickley Blast.
Oh, yeah.
Bickley Murata Mornings, Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.